At the beginning of our first class, we spoke about target account. The target account in the Bank One case is what? So there are two things that they're tracking. One is change in interest income, which is earnings at risk. The other is change in market value or shareholder value. Because if you look at the case starts off with a discussion about how the market is perceiving their strategy and how that is having an impact on their share price. And the driver, the primary driver, the risk is changes in interest rates, and the setting is the balance sheet and the income statement. How does the Bank One case bring all of this together? If you were to build an ALM model, you'd start off with the balance sheet of the bank. You'd then go to the P&L. Then valuation here does not mean valuation of the bank. Valuation here means valuation of the asset side, valuation of the liability side based on the expected changes in rates. Then there are a bunch of ALM reports that we'll talk about a bit. Then there is an interest rate generator that goes out and throws out an interest rate shock. Then there's a calculation engine that calculates the impact of the changes in interest rates based on those valuations on the balance sheet and the P&L as per these reports. And then you present it. In the Air Canada case, you had a very simple simulation. A simple simulation was jet fuel linked expenses, growth, and net margin. And the item that you were simulating was net margin. In the Bank One case, you're saying, I have a bank. The bank has made decisions with respect to investing in certain category and types of assets. Bank has made decisions with respect to the funding choices they want on their balance sheet. The bank has then gone out and hedged a certain portfolio of securities. And all of this combined thing has come together in this specific scenario to show me what's coming out. So the Bank One case actually is a little bit more complicated in the sense that in addition to understanding the core issue in the case itself, which is what has Bank One done with its derivative portfolio, you also have to take some time out and understand how does banking work. You have to think, how does banking work in the context of asset liability management? And where is this Bank One thinking is coming from, what they've done? Just want to make sure that we're all clear on a handful of terms that will be used in the case later on. Sigma, what is sigma? Standard deviation or volatility. Duration, what is duration? Okay, very good. What is convexity? The error term in duration. What's asset sensitivity? Let's take a very simple example. So I have a bank, and the bank has assets. And the bank also has liabilities. So in this specific case, the bank has assets in only two categories, up to 6 months and then up to 1 year. In terms of assets, the bank has $1,000 of assets here, has $1,000 of assets here, and it has $900 of assets here, liabilities here, and it has the difference between assets and liabilities here is what? And what about here? So if all assets, and let's also add some numbers, let's say you earn about 11% here, you pay 6% here. So if you were to think in terms of your P&L or your profitability, on these assets, how much do you earn? Okay, now what do you pay here? No, so now the problem is my gap is negative 250, my gap is plus 700. This is 6 months, this is 1 year. In this case, what's happening? Would assets reprice faster or would liabilities reprice faster? If you look at the first case, you have more liabilities, right? You have more deposits. As interest rates change, these will also change, right? The assets will also, and they will also change. In the second case, what's happening? I have more assets or more liabilities. I have more assets, right? But the difference is being funded by two sources. So the definition that we looked at earlier, asset sensitive or liability sensitive, implies that if a bank's maturity profile is set in such a fashion, or repricing is set in such a fashion, that its assets reprice faster than liabilities, it is asset sensitive. If its liabilities reprice faster than its assets, then it's liability sensitive. And the impact of being liability sensitive is that if rates are going up, you lose money. You make less. If rates are going down, you make more money. When rates are going up, the bank should be asset sensitive. If a bank predicts or forecasts or generates or creates an interest rate outlook, and based on that interest rate outlook changes the profile of itself from being asset sensitive to liability sensitive, or from liability sensitive to asset sensitive, is this hedging? Speculation. Hedging is when you lock yourself in to reduce or eliminate your exposure to a change. In this case, you're not reducing or eliminating your exposure. In this case, you are positioning yourself so you can benefit from either a rise in rate or a decline in rates. It can only invest them at 4%, because that's the new market rate. It takes a double whammy. It loses a productive asset that's earning above market rate, and it can no longer invest the proceeds of that asset. The Bank One case is a great case because it shows you a bank's exposure to risk factors that a bank is exposed to. Philosophy of running a bank is to borrow at lower rates from stable customers and lend at higher rates. If the bank also starts playing with its view on interest rates in this mix, so it's a reasonably complex business, you know, it becomes even more complicated. So the objective of this statement, restricting earning sensitivity, is to make sure that nobody comes in and plays with the balance sheet to increase short-term sensitivity for their own benefit and leave the bank with a much longer-term problem, a much more dangerous longer-term problem. Do you all understand the concept of an IRS? Interest rate swap. I have a pool of 30-year fixed rate mortgages. I also have a pool of 10-year fixed rate bonds. I have two separate instruments. What am I doing with these instruments? The 10-year fixed rate bonds would look really nice on my balance sheet if interest rates came down. Because if interest rates came down, their interest rate sensitivity is about 10%, which means they would go up in value by 10%. But what if I expected that interest rates are not going to come down, interest rates are going to go up? The logical solution for me would be to sell these bonds, right, before interest rates go up. There are transaction costs. So if I sell these bonds and then buy them again, I will lose some money. There are also instances when the bond belongs to a subsidiary. The bond belongs to an associated company, a partner company. The bond has to be held on my balance sheet and I cannot sell it. So now I'm stuck. This bond throws out a 10% coupon every year, generates that. And let's say the notional amount, the value of this bond is $100 million. So think of notional as the face value and the par value of the transaction. For this 100 million, what I do is I find somebody else who is willing to take the same exposure on the same amount, which is $100 million, and do the opposite. I'm going to generate a 10% fixed rate coupon on this bond for the next 10 years. So I say, okay, let me give you this coupon. But in return, what you should do then is you have a floating rate coupon for 10 years. So I will give you the fixed rate coupon and you give me the floating rate in exchange. And I will calculate the 10% coupon and the 10% interest using this. You can calculate using that. The notional amount that both of us will use for our calculation will be $100 million on both sides. So now in essence what happens is, let's say when we do this transaction, the fixed rate is 10%. This is also 10%. So there is no exchange. Right? If I give him 10, if he gives me 10, there is no exchange, right? So we do what we call a netting transaction. I call him and say, okay, I owe you 10%, you owe me 10%, the net number is 0, no exchange required, thank you very much, end of transaction. First year is gone. The next year, this rate is still 10% because it's a fixed rate. And as I expected, rates have gone up. And as rates have gone up, this floating rate is no longer 10%. This floating rate is now 12%. So I call him up again and say, okay, I owe you 10%. You owe me 12%. The net number is 2%. Please send me 2%. Thank you very much. End of story. The next year, which is the third year, floating rate is 13%. Same call. Please send over 3%. Thank you very much. The year after that, rates have fallen dramatically, and the floating rate is now 7%. So then I call up and say, you know, I owe you 3%, and I'm sending over 3%. Thank you very much. Right? So this exchange happens on every coupon reset date. We calculate the amount we owe to each other, we net out the value, and we exchange the net number. By doing this, what I've effectively done is I have created a scenario where I've literally sold this bond without selling it. And I've acquired a floating rate bond without buying it. So because I've exchanged, because I've swapped our coupons, this is known as an interest rate swap. If we exchange two floating rates, this would then become a basis swap. Now, well, what if your notional is 100, 90, 80, 70, 60, 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, and 0? So this is what you call an amortization schedule. Why would you need this? You would need this because, let's say if this bond was an amortizing bond, right, where the notional principal on this bond would be reducing, would be paid down by 10% every year. If you were to do this, then the floating rate bond that you need on this side needs to have the same schedule, reduction by 10% every year. So if you put the amortization schedule in play, you end up with AIRS, the amortizing interest rate swap, or the index amortizing interest rate swap. In most cases, when you do swaps with liquid instruments. So in most cases, the rates that you're swapping are rates that have very high credit standing, credit rating, and because of that, they are also very liquid.